Paul didn't believe. Despite being raised in a strong Catholic family, he rarely found intellectual arguments on the faith to be convincing in any profound way. He looked for fulfillment elsewhere, but always seemed to want more. It was a dark and rainy afternoon over Paris, Christmas Day, 1886, when Paul decides to attend Mass at the Cathedral of Notre Dame. He found the ceremony rather unimpressive, but decides to come back for the singing of Vespers, perhaps out of a sense of obligation to his family. He entered the church, settling in to listen to the singing of the Psalms and the Magnificat. What happened next is best explained in the words of Paul Claudel himself. Then occurred the event which dominates my entire life. In an instant, my heart was touched, and I believed. I believed with such a strength of adherence, with such an uplifting of my entire being, with such powerful conviction, with such a certainty, leaving no room for any kind of doubt, that since then, all the books, all the arguments, all the incidents and accidents of a busy life have been unable to shake my faith, nor indeed to affect it in any way. It was an overwhelming experience of beauty that provided the best argument for God, piercing through his hardened heart and awakening within him a love for the divine. This is what this podcast is about: encountering God through powerful, profound experiences of beauty. Welcome to the Beauty Ever New Podcast.
Welcome to the Beauty Ever New Podcast, a podcast with Rafael Morales and Chris Duffel, two young architects from Houston, Texas, and we're going to be talking about beauty. We're going to be talking about beauty specifically as it relates to things we know about. We are architects by profession. We do it every day. We both work in kind of in some way in a dream job. We get to design churches. So we spend all of our time getting paid to do this, and it's also an in-work and out-of-work obsession of ours. And
yeah,
not just the architecture itself, but particularly this sort of popular word now, at least in Catholic circles, beauty. Everyone is wanting to bring beauty back to the church. What does that mean? How do we actually do that? A lot of times that's discussed in terms of art and in terms of things that we seem to have lost since, let's say, like 50, 60, 70 years ago, particularly as it relates to things that we seem to have lost since the Second Vatican Council. And this podcast is called Beauty Ever New, the Beauty Ever New Podcast. Kind of riffing off of the quote from St. Augustine, where he talks about God, where he says, "Late have I loved thee, O beauty ever ancient, beauty ever new." So what this is in some way, it's looking at the life of the faithful, the life of the church, and ways that we can go about bringing beauty back into our lives. Talk about how it matters and why it matters, orbiting particularly around architecture, but also other things that relate to it, like art and liturgy and community. Architecture relates to everything and in some way affects everything, so it allows us to be broad with the topics, but we hope to land on things that are practical and create a sort of discussion around Catholic Church architecture and bringing beauty back into the fold.
Yeah, and I would just add, we've been thinking about this, and it has evolved as we've been working on it. But I would say that there are three foundational things to the podcast. And that is, the first is that we have a reverence for beauty. We don't take it for granted. Beauty is something that is incredibly hard to achieve. And we believe that to achieve beauty, you have to be very patient and very dedicated to your craft. And the second thing I would say is, as John Paul II talks about in the letter to artists, there's a spirituality to the artist, that beauty needs to be born out of prayer and out of a deep devotional life. So I think we want to talk to artists and just people that work with surrounding just church and beauty. We want to talk to them about how they pray, and how their prayer life leads to their work. So that's kind of a second thing. And I would say the last thing is that I think in order to achieve beauty on a church-wide level, where let's say every parishioner is able to come in contact with beauty, it's going to be a team effort. We're going to have to find partners. We're going to have to find like-minded people to help us work towards this goal. And so those three things are kind of the founding principles of the podcast and what all the conversations will be revolving around.
Yeah, and in some way, we're focused on, or maybe me, because it's a preoccupation of mine in sort of everything I do. One of the projects of this podcast is trying to figure out what the right questions are to ask. You know, if you frame your question and you make the appropriate distinctions, the more you do that, and maybe this is the sort of, you know, infant Thomist in me, the more distinctions you make and the more you define the problem, the more clear the solution becomes.
Mm-hmm. And
figuring out what those questions are and not being afraid to wade into waters that may seem uncomfortable is I think a not insignificant part of the project of this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's, I think it goes back to the first principle is, you know, I think beauty is very difficult to achieve.
Right.
I think it's being thrown around a lot and it's the right ideal to hold. So it's the bar is set high enough. Mm. I think you and I just want people to realize this is not a small task. This is not a small challenge.
Yeah.
We believe it's worth it. We believe in beauty. We see its power. We see what it can do in our lives.
Yeah.
But we just want people to realize what it takes to get there.
Yeah.
And I think that'll be a big part of what we talk about.
Yeah, and how you actually do it, right? You can hear someone, it's sort of like having a politician say, I'm for education. Like no one's going to disagree with that. They're going to disagree with how you allot tax dollars and how you go about actually doing it.
Right.
So we're I think, focused more on the, like, where the ball drops and, like, how you actually go about making it happen.
Yes,
so.
We're interested in actually achieving beauty, not just talking about it. I think that's... Yeah. We hope that will be one of the distinguishing factors of our podcast.
Yeah. So you're an architect. That's pretty interesting. Tell me about your work. What does a day in the life look like?
Well, as an architect, you wear many hats. You do many things depending on the stage of the project. A project, you know, goes through several phases from the beginning, which is just a concept, to the development of how the building will be put together and ultimately the construction. So I think the day in the life of an architect will change based on where you are in the project. In my case, right now, our project is nearing the end of what we call construction documents, which is just drawing all the detailed drawings so that it can be built. Mm-hmm. So day in the life right now is to go in the office and to think through all of the intricate details that the contractor who builds the building will need to know in order for the project to actually happen.
Yeah.
And so that's really been what I'm preoccupied these days.
Yeah. So how does that relate to this podcast, Beauty Ever New, Catholic Architecture, discussions about how to bring something like beauty, the sort of, like, you know, effervescent term, into a concrete reality? How does your job relate to this?
Well, I think it's how beauty happens. I mean, it's, in a way, architecture can be described as, you know, having really high aspirations at the beginning. So you can say, at the beginning, you can say, well, I want a church to be beautiful. I want it to be a reflection of heaven. I want to walk in and just have my breath taken away. So those are very ephemeral kind of aspirations.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you have to take those, then filter them through reality, how you actually build a building with physical matter, and then arrive at the end, when you walk into the building, achieving all of the ephemeral goals that you set at the beginning. Right now I'm in the stage of taking all of the kind of ideas and finding how they manifest themselves down to the smallest detail. So that when you walk into the space, you see the beauty and you get that sense that you're looking for.
Yeah, I was teeing up these questions thinking you were going to talk about, like, architecture, you know, and go off on design stuff, and then, like, you know, beauty being this thing that's a bit more esoteric. But I like where you landed on that. It's in some way beauty the way it becomes reality is by an accumulation of hundreds of decisions from the designer, from the architect, the project manager, the team, every day, that end up collectively adding towards something that the end occupant, listener, parishioner will experience in a way where they don't see all the decisions. They just see the entire space at once. And they you know, the average person will have a gut feeling of if it works or it doesn't, but they don't see all of the, you know, hundreds and thousands of decisions that go into the building. So in a way, that's a great answer, that that beauty is something that happens with every little mundane decision, but when they all add up together.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you don't get beauty unless you put in that work.
Yeah. Yeah. So who are some people that you're planning on interviewing for the show? Who are the people that, let's say, you're most excited about, or anyone, all of them? Everyone is good people. Everyone that we're interviewing is good.
So I'm really excited to talk to artists specifically. I think that the church for hundreds of years has been known for having churches that had art as an integral part of the building.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in recent times, in the last 20, 30 years, art got divorced from architecture.
Yeah.
Now art is seen as something you hang on the wall, whereas it used to be that really the art and the architecture were seamless. You could, you could almost not tell the difference.
Yeah.
I'm interested to talk to artists to see how we can get integrated again.
Yeah.
How we can be kind of really work together and create buildings where that line is blurred once again. I think that's really important.
So if you're listening and you're an artist, you're a painter, you're a sculptor, you're a mosaic artist, you're something else that I'm just not listing in the token painter, artist, sculptor, reach out, let us know. We have a Twitter and Facebook and website, beautyevernew.com. All of the associated handles will be there, Instagram, what have you.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's great. Let's see, topics. Tell me about some interesting topics we're going to be covering.
Well, we're going to have a variety of shows. We'll have some shows that are just telling stories. Like, for example, there's a really interesting story about Notre Dame, the cathedral in Paris, about how it was almost demolished. So that's an episode that I think will be of great interest, because now it is unfathomable to think that you would ever demolish Notre Dame.
Why? Go into that for a second. Why was Notre Dame almost demolished? What were the context on that?
Well, basically what was happening, it was kind of close to the turn of the century. I think it was either mid-1800s or late 1800s. And Gothic architecture was seen as the remnants of the past, as seen as passé. We are moving on. Society is kind of leaving.
So the Industrial Revolution was revving up.
Right. And what was in at the time was a neo-Roman, neo-Greek style of architecture. Mm. And Gothic was seen as this kind of dark and grotesque form of architecture. Mm. And just among kind of the high cultural circles in Paris, everyone wanted the new neo-Roman, neo-Greek kind of style of architecture. And long story short, what ended up saving it was a novel that was written by Victor Hugo.
Victor Hugo.
The author of Les Miserables.
Yeah.
Where he just was passionately arguing that it needed to be saved because it was such a distinctly French form of architecture. And that to lose the cathedral was to lose what it means to be French.
Mm.
So.
Nice.
So that's one of the episode types. The others are going to be conversations with musicians, with artists, with fundraisers, with contractors, with anyone that touches the process along the way. Again, like you said, it's a series of decisions that are made. So you could say, well, a fundraiser may not have a direct hand in what something looks like.
Yeah.
But without the fundraiser, there is no building.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think we'll try to put together a collection of interviews and conversations that allow us to paint a picture of what it takes to get to beauty.
Yeah. So talk about the future of architecture for the Catholic Church, let's say in the next 50 to 75 years. What do you see playing out?
What I think is our biggest challenge, or is what we're facing is, so as everyone knows, there was this thing called the Second Vatican Council that that just marked a turning point of the church.
What? What?
Well, it was an ecumenical council in the 60s that was meant to, in essence, craft a message or the message of the church, but in a way that modern man would understand it. Mm. It was mainly a pastoral council. It did not involve a change in doctrine. But the aftermath of the council resulted in a very wide and sweeping set of changes that were made to what is central to our faith, which is the liturgy. Now, much ink has been spilled talking about what the council actually intended and what should be the way the liturgy is celebrated. I mean, it's a continuing conversation the church is having.
Mm-hmm.
Architecture is having the same conversation right now. The Second Vatican Council, the aftermath of the Second Vatican Council caused a flurry of experimentation with church architecture. I mean, you got all kinds of forms, all kinds of different, sometimes weird looking churches. And I think
we should do an episode just on the weird Houston churches and like go take pictures with
plenty of them. And I think what people are realizing now is it's not so great. Like we are missing out on the beauty and the grandeur that churches used to offer.
Mm. Yeah. In some ways it's the problem of the aesthetic, where when you pair a movement of culture or society to an image, it's a tricky thing dealing with the image of the building as it relates to things that happened.
I think you're absolutely right. I just got finished reading a book about Pope Benedict. And in the book, they talk about Pope Benedict's papacy. And actually, it's an interview with Pope Benedict. So he talks about the papacy and just his whole life. He's reflecting on his life. And what I would say is what architecture needs to do is what Benedict did for theology, which was, he was always faithful and in continuity with the church, but yet knew that it was imperative that the church find new and ever refreshing ways to present the gospel. And so when you read Benedict, I mean, it is very Catholic, and yet it is very novel. Mm. It is very fresh.
It's beautiful, but it's new, like the name of a great podcast that that's everyone right. should listen to.
So I think that's what architecture needs to do.
Yeah.
So in a way, I feel like architecture needs to catch up to Pope Benedict, is how I would put it.
Yeah.
Because Benedict would say the council was good. We needed the council. We needed the change. But the quick and sometimes haphazard way that we just threw stuff out was problematic. And he would say that up front.
Yeah.
But he would always say, it's not just about going to the past. It is about reexamining ourselves as a church anew and moving forward from that point. So I think we just need to catch up to Pope Benedict.
Yeah. No, Pope Benedict's attitude towards the past and towards like an insistence on God being a father that can create newness in your life and can like heal your wounds and bring you to a new place, is a great parallel. So best case scenario, the newness and freshness that he, you know, did for the church, this podcast does for architecture, or the architecture itself will do.
I would say that's an aspiration we have. Yeah.
I mean, talking about the architecture is part of it. Like it's the conversation about the buildings and the buildings themselves doing the work.
So I'll begin with this.
Yeah.
There is many ways that we can talk about these things. Mm-hmm. We can spread the message. Why a podcast and not a blog or not, you know, a series of roundtables? Because historically, sometimes people will say that architects aren't the best at talking about architecture.
Yeah.
So why did we choose a podcast, or why do you think we chose a podcast?
So a few reasons. That's a really good question, by the way. I'm glad you asked it. I think podcasting is at the beginning of a sharp curve up. So it's going to be something that just becomes more and more common. when I first started listening to podcasts, it was hard to explain to people why they should listen to podcasts. It's sort of like the first time that, I don't know, like the first time I saw an iPhone, I was like, I want my buttons, man. Give me my buttons back. I don't need a touch screen. Like, stupid. Yeah. And now you look back at it and you're like, you know, it's going to be one of those things. It's going to be like, why wasn't everyone doing it then?
Mm-hmm.
It'll be like trying to explain to someone what their name was. It's like, did you really not know that it was going to be? So I think it's at that point. Second, it's helpful conversationally for people to listen to other people talk about architecture. I think fewer people are going to read a book about people talking about Catholic architecture,
right,
than they will listening to two young architects just talking and having a conversation about it. That's what we need to have, I think, first, is just a conversation to get people using terms in the same way,
mm-hmm,
and talking about the same sorts of things, and then like setting up contexts in which the right sorts of questions can be asked by us and maybe asked by other people. We're going to have guests come on the show. So I think it's in some way absorbable in that way in a better way. Mm-hmm. I think one reality just for me too is like I can listen to podcasts when I'm washing dishes. I don't have a lot of time to read books. So
right,
the priest or bishop or cardinal or Holy Father who's listening to this, you don't have a lot of time between masses and confessions and things. So we're intentionally going to focus this and try to keep the episodes brief so that there is a lot of good content that can be listened to. There are some podcasts that I love that are hours long.
Right.
And that's not what this is going to be. It's going to be something that's a bit more condensed. So part of it is that audio format is easier to listen to. You can listen to a podcast sitting on the couch, but you can also just listen to it going for a run or washing dishes or mm-hmm driving. And you can't do that with books. So in some way, podcasts have a broader reach.
Yes.
Because of that.
And in defense of ourselves and architects, the only way to get better at talking about stuff is to talk about
it. Yeah. Yeah. So I those are lots of like maybe overly practical reasons, but I think those are good reasons why. When I think of the things that have affected me most in the last, let's say like 12 months, there are more podcasts than there are books.
Yeah.
Like my wife, for instance, I in the evenings I'll start talking to her and I'll say, "Hey honey, I heard this thing on a podcast." And then, maybe a month or two ago, she sort of waved her hands and said, "You can stop, prefacing conversations with that. I'll just assume right that's
where you learn the knowledge.
You heard it in a podcast." Yeah.
The other thing I'll say is we don't exclude other possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Like we want to do, we will be doing a blog.
Yeah.
And heck, we might write a book someday. I mean, why not?
Yeah.
All right. So the next one is the church faces all kinds of problems right now.
Mm.
Problems that I think in comparison seem like way more important than talking about architecture.
I thought I could answer just like East.
So why is it important to be talking about this now with everything that's going on in the church?
Yeah, that's a really good question. We're recording this after the first two Vigano letters and, the Pennsylvania report, which I'm sure by the time that people are listening to this, there are going to be lots of more grand jury reports that are released. So there's a question of like, why matters, if there are much more urgent and pressing issues, why does this matter? And that's a very, very good question. And, I asked myself that at first when we talked about this, like why even do the project? Given all of the sort of pain that people are experiencing,
yeah,
and the just sort of realizing what it's like to have a priest of Jesus Christ be, convicted of mm-hmm some sort of awful, crime. The real reason why is, because architecture matters, and that's a specific instance of a broader comment, which you could say that art matters, which is even more specific, and you make it a little bit more broader and say that beauty itself matters, and that beauty can be, if we choose to make it so and choose to take on this project as artists, as creative individuals working in and for the church, whether you're being hired by the church or you're just an artist doing something else, if you do your task excellently, then you're doing it for the church. Let's say this project, that can be a means of expressing who God is, and it can be a means of healing, and it can be a means of growth. And I think that's it. Like, it's that beauty, as you apprehend it, isn't something that you experience in the discursive world of like, there's a word and I understand what it means. There's a concept, there's a theory. It's just something that washes over you. You walk into a church and people who are converted, they don't, it's hard to put it into words, because it's something that, that it's like you're sitting on a beach and the waves just sort of wash over you. It's something that you receive. You don't actually, you can't apprehend it. You can't actually reach out and grab it. It's not something you can have control over.
Yeah.
And because, like, things of beauty like that happen upon you, that they have the ability to just sort of strike you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because those sorts of experiences have that power, that it's our job to take those and try to make them as enriching and as life-giving as possible.
Yeah, no, I think that's very good. And I think that sometimes when everything else fails you, you know, when argument fails you, when explanations fail you, beauty is something that pierces through all of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've heard stories. In fact, there was the biography of Steve Jobs.
Mm.
And Steve Jobs was not a religious man by any stretch of the imagination. But he had a friend who was a musician who played the violin.
Mm-hmm.
And one day, I think this was closer to the end of his life, came over and played the violin for Steve Jobs. Mm. And Steve Jobs was in tears and said to his friend, "When you play music, I believe in God." You know, that is how powerful the music was. So I think that that's why beauty matters, and that's why architecture matters. Because even when, you know, people fail us, people will continue to fail us. That's just unfortunately the reality that we face. But God is there and God exists. And I think that architecture gives us a unique reminder of that through beauty.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the probably the first thing that will heal a broken heart. If there is, you know, a heart lying on the floor broken, that probably won't, unless it's like literally just a spreadsheet of a heart, respond to, like, you know, St. Thomas Aquinas' proofs for the existence of God.
Yeah.
But they will hear the song and they will, you know, their heart will be mended. And it's you know, the sort of Westerner in me, like, starts thinking in terms of, like, optimization. Like, how do you make it, like, better, and how do you quantify it?
Yeah.
But, like, it's not about that. It's about being with. It's like being in the presence of a beautiful building or a beautiful song or a beautiful painting is like sitting with Jesus.
Yes.
It's like, how do you optimize your relationship with Jesus? You spend more time with him.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with beautiful things. You are with them more.
Yeah, and in a way, it's when we're with the Lord, and I, you know, need to make more time for it, to be honest with you. But it's almost like, you know, when you're thinking about all these things, you know, how do I optimize? How do I do all this? And beauty and the Lord and Jesus just says, you know, just kind of quiets you down. It's like, just stop.
Mm-hmm.
Just sit here with me. Yeah. Don't worry about all of
that. And how difficult is that to actually sit and be still? It's like, if we can't, I mean, we're definitely going to talk about this more at length in the future, but in order to be able to apprehend something, it requires you to, you know, give yourself the gift of absence from the world so that you can actually receive something.
Right. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges we face, even with beauty, is that we've become so numb by everything that we surround ourselves with, whether it's our phones or whether it's television or just popular culture, that I think beauty has to do much more to get through.
Yeah.
Just because there's so much more surrounding us. It's almost like we're in this cocoon of distraction.
Yeah.
So how does beauty pierce all of that? I think it can. I think beauty has that power. Mm. But it's become that much more difficult to have, let's say, a church have the effect that we're talking about on any person. Just because They're walking around looking at a phone and not looking at the fact that they're walking by this amazing cathedral.
Right.
Rapid fire.
Rapid fire. Sound effects. Yep. So I'm going to rapid fire some questions to you. I started writing some rapid fire questions. And these might sound familiar to you. So when you think of the word successful, who's the first person that comes to mind and why?
Mother Teresa.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Because she said...
What did she ever do?
I know. What did you ever do? Well, two reasons. One is that there's this amazing story of her being on a plane with a businessman.
Yes.
That she didn't know, and turning to him and saying, what do you do that matters? A question that just pierces right through your heart, right?
What was that? What do you do that matters?
What do you do that matters? And the other reason is... Mother Teresa would say, we are not called to be successful. We are called to be faithful. So that's what I think
successful.
About.
Yeah. Who do you think of when thinking successful? Yeah. Yeah. I heard a guy recently say, when you think of Calcutta, who do you think of? Mother Teresa. What was the name of the bishop of Calcutta when she was there? It's like, no one.
Right.
Like, you don't have to be bishop. You don't have to do anything. You know, you don't have to have an office to make an impact. All you need to do is be humble like her. What's your favorite documentary or movie?
Favorite documentary is... I have a couple. I like Ken Burns documentaries a lot. The West is a really good documentary. It just chronicles the westward expansion of America. Mm-hmm. That's a really good one. There's another one on New York, also by the Burn Brothers, and one on the Roosevelts. So I would say Ken Burns is
nice.
My documentary go-to.
What obsessions do you explore on the evenings or weekends?
Honestly, what we're doing right now, this is my obsession that I think about a lot. The other thing is board games. I like to...
Come again?
Excuse me. I like board games a lot. I like them because they bring people together, because it's something that you do that isn't on a screen, something that is tactile and that you have to think about and solve these little problems. And also because I like designing board games. And one of the reasons I like designing board games is I feel like in many ways there's a lot of parallels to architecture. You have to tell a story in a way that people can experience it following a simple set of rules. So I really like that about it.
Mm. Yeah. What topic would you speak about if you were asked to give a TED talk on something outside of your main area of expertise?
Mm.
Just like pick an interesting topic.
So this will seem very obvious to you just because we just talked about it. But I think John Senior and the poetic mode of knowledge, just the idea that there are things in this world that we cannot, find in a book, that you just have to go out there and experience.
Mm, yeah. Tune into episode, I'm just going to guess 3 if you want to hear more about that. So you don't have to listen to a TED talk. You can hear the podcast talk. Let's see. What is the best or most worthwhile investment you've made? Could be an investment of money, time, energy, or other resource. And how did you decide to make the investment?
Well, this isn't necessarily an investment, but I would say like one of the best decisions I've ever made is marrying my wife. Mm-hmm. Just simply because, you know, the reason that I married Colleen, my wife, is she really pushed me to become a saint. She made me a better person. I could see holiness in her. And from, you know, like people talk about soulmates, and I actually don't believe in soulmates. But if they existed...
They don't believe in you either.
Colleen would come pretty close.
Take that.
So I would say, you know, just even from a professional point of view, Colleen is an artist.
Yeah.
She's a painter, a landscape painter, kind of impressionist style. And so we've always been able to have conversations about art and about architecture. And so I feel like that's been an incredible investment.
Do you have a quote you live your life by or think of often?
Architecture is not subsidized self-expression.
Nice. What is the worst advice you see or hear being dispensed in the world? In your world?
In my world?
Yes.
No one will notice that. We hear that a lot at work when, you know, there's some room or there's something that was overlooked or that maybe we don't want to spend money on. And somebody says, no one will notice that because inevitably someone will notice that.
What is something really weird or unsettling that happens to you on a regular basis?
Really weird or unsettling. Thankfully this hasn't happened to me in a little while, but what used to happen to me quite a bit is when I would take a nap, let's say I fall asleep on the couch, I would wake up, but not be able to move my body. And I would feel like I am trapped in my body and I couldn't get out. That was really strange. And what I would have to do is tell myself to go back to sleep, because otherwise I would get really restless because I couldn't move my body. That was very strange.
That's really weird. I'm moving on to the next question because that's really creeping me out. What have you changed? What have you changed your mind about in the last few years and why?
I guess the first thing that comes to mind architecturally is that it's important to be a well-rounded architect, a holistic architect. The industry tends to want to divide people into a designer camp or a detailer camp. Mm. So you either draw pretty pictures or you figure out how it's built. And I have come to believe, even though I didn't used to, that it is best to be well-rounded in order to get the best results and the most beautiful buildings.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting for our listeners as an architect, that architects do everything, or they can do everything. They can do lots of the menial stuff, or they can do lots of the design. That's different from lots of other professions.
It is, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, rapid fire over.
Okay, so now it's your turn.
Mm.
Favorite book?
Happy Are You Poor?
I never heard of it.
Yeah, it's good. It's about being poor. Gospel poverty. Next.
Next.
Moving on.
Favorite building or place?
Favorite building or place. Probably the lot next to my dad's house in Sour Lake, Texas. Population just over 1,000. Southeast Texas, Diocese of Beaumont, Our Lady of Victory Parish. It's a big open field that we light bonfires on a couple times a year. It's great.
Awesome. If you were not an architect, what would you be doing? What else would you be doing?
I would be a philosophy professor or an astrophysicist.
Nice.
Yes. Because I spend my free time looking at those things online. Those were the, I got into, to like, I had like no idea what I was doing. I was applying to undergraduate programs and I got into a philosophy program, a like physics program. It was like, no, it's aerospace engineering and architecture. I just randomly picked stuff. I think, I don't know. So I'd probably be doing one of those.
That's awesome. I'm not smart enough to be either of those.
Sounds really impressive. It's really, yeah.
All right. If you have your choice of going between these two things on vacation, would you go to a city or out in nature?
Almost certainly nature. Depends on the city, but probably nature.
It's interesting for an architect.
Yeah.
But maybe that's where you get your inspiration.
Mm.
Cake or ice cream?
Grandma's chocolate cake.
I've had it.
Hands down. Yeah, it's good. I've had it. It's great. Next.
Corbusier or Palladio?
I don't know why I'm saying Palladio, but I'm saying Palladio. I don't really have a preference between the two, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, good Palladio and good Corb. Good Palladio and good Corb are like, you know, if I can look past some of Le Corb's projects for that are churches that I think are like liturgically like ill suited for liturgy.
Yeah.
They're pretty interesting buildings, but that's the answer.
Okay. Franciscan or Dominican?
Probably Dominican.
Yeah. I see you more of a Franciscan for some reason.
Really?
I don't know.
I said probably. Man, I was wrong.
What is your favorite phrase to say?
My favorite phrase to say. That's a good question. Favorite phrase to say. Favorite phrase to say. Do I say something with some sort of consistency? I don't know. I don't know if there's a phrase, but I find that people often...
I know.
Oh, you do? Yeah. Answer for me. Go. It's rapid fire.
What if?
What if?
Yeah. Like just begin that's anything
true.
With what if.
That's true. That's a what if.
I feel like I'm that's totally you. That's totally you.
Yeah.
Okay, last one. Yeah. Food or sleep?
Sleep. I wanted to say food, but then I thought about last night when I fell asleep, like patting my son on the back, going to bed. And then like I woke up like 3 hours later and then went to bed myself.
Sleep is pretty
yeah, awesome. Yeah, sleep.
All right. So that's all I got. Thanks for listening. To continue the conversation, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, and let us know how you're experiencing beauty in your churches and communities. Also, check out our blog, The Intellectual Workbench, for show notes, guest information, helpful visual aids, and more.